Blog Talk Radio.
Congratulations out
Mr. Andrew Parks and Dr. Kathleen Carroll Parks. Their nuptials were last weekend, and it was a fantastic situation. I'm proud to say that I am now the grandfather of seven boys and one girl.
Wow. You know what? My email's been jamming up on me, and I came across that literally just a couple of days ago, and I was like, wait a minute. Is that why we weren't on the air? Congratulations. Congratulations. Definitely.
And, they did a fantastic job, and all the kids were part of the ceremony, and the boys, her boys, and Matthew stood as his father's groomsman, and our boys took her each step of the way. They were spread out through the church, and each one took them until they got down to Trevor, who was the oldest, and he escorted her to the altar. Then the other boys got up behind, and when the priest said, "Who gives this woman?" Trevor shook his head, and they all said, "We do." So it was really, really neat. Really neat.
Okay, well, there it is. If the boys approve, then we approve.
That's right. That's right.
Simple as that.
Yep. Well, it's been a really wild week this week, hasn't it, guys?
Yeah,
absolutely. Especially, what was it, yesterday, last night, actually.
Yeah. I still don't understand. Well, yeah, I do understand. Stevie came out like a steamroller for the first three or four rounds, but then Tarver seemed to come on, and he seemed to back off more to a defensive. What do you think, Z?
Well, I totally kind of agree with you, and it's crazy because I'm surprised that Steve, the kind of fight Stevie fought. Thank you for Ty. I had a prior engagement, so I do have to thank Ty. He alerted me that it was on YouTube, and I caught it without seeing the results and without the benefit of hearing a whole bunch of commentary. And I came to my conclusion that when they said it was a draw, I thought Stevie slightly outworked them, but it was a draw. I mean, I couldn't even argue with that. And to comment on what you said, Butch, Stevie, he looked good early. He looked disciplined early, but somewhere along the fight, he lost his discipline, and I started looking at him and I said, "Am I watching Tim Bradley?"
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
Yeah.
And it was just just his movements, what he was doing. He was falling in a Tarver's counter shot. And it came to a point where Farber was just leaning over, like, Stevie's going to fall for this. And Stevie would lunge in and fall for it. Stevie's jab was working very good. His jab and his body attack. He was going to Tarver's body very good. Because he had, with the jab, he steered Tarver's guard high. So with that high guard, he exposed Tarver's body, which isn't the most ripped. But Tarver's a durable guy. I mean, and the way Tarver fought, he didn't extend himself in the early rounds. He didn't extend himself in the late rounds. He fought at a steady pace. But he found his niche. And when Tarver found his niche, it was up to Stevie to adapt and not to go there. And Stevie just went totally sloppy. It looked like at times he wanted to back him up, and then at times he wanted to box him from the outside. Then at times it looked like he didn't really know what to do. I mean, I don't understand it.
I completely agree with you. Like, I watching the fight, I thought there was a case to be made for Stevie outworking Antonio Tarver, and I thought that's the way the decision was going to go. The draw didn't really surprise me, nor did I have a problem with it. I thought the fight could have gone either way. Part of the reason being is because though Stevie was letting his hands go a lot, he was not very effective at times. Mm-hmm. And when Tarver let his hands go, he typically landed the more eye-catching, cleaner shots. One thing Tarver has to be given credit for is Tarver is a master of subtleties. He makes very subtle little movements to his left, very subtle little rolls to catch punches off his elbows. He doesn't get hit. In fact, one of the things that was more surprising to me was how little times he was cleanly caught. in the face in that fight. You know, he was caught with the jab, but he was cleanly, he was very rarely cleanly caught with any of Steve's power shots, and Steve is really good at getting his power shots in. The other thing, too, is Tarver's timing is impeccable. And even at this age, when you come to him or when he lulls, when he lures you to punch first, he can time you pretty well. And I think what he did was, in essence, in certain spots, he had Stevie second-guessing his approach. As Stevie was attacking initially and then Tarver started getting his rhythm down and started timing him, to me it looked like Stevie said, oh, well, I got to change his approach because he's starting to catch me. And it just seemed like Stevie could never really get a beat. You know, Antonio Tarver talks a lot. He's very loquacious. And what he said was that his defense was impenetrable. Now, that's not what I saw last night, but what I saw was a guy who who's a much, much better defender than he gets credit for, because he really, really, you know, did not allow Tarver to, Stevie to catch him, you know, with a lot of clean shots. Stevie tends to pepper guys. He wasn't able to pepper Tarver. And I think, again, I think his timing kind of made Stevie second guess his approach to Tarver.
It just he was aggressive in the first couple of rounds, and all of a sudden he went into it like a protect mode.
I remember in the fourth round, Stevie, that he got caught with, well, they say he didn't get caught with a shot. I mean, he more stumbled. But it looked like he stumbled into a shot, because I looked at it, I rewound it and looked at his reactions afterward. And he grabbed Tarver like he got wobbled. I've seen Stevie get hit hard. And that's what Stevie does. He'll grab you. He's not going to, instead of the aggressive guy he was. And it seemed like ever since then, Stevie, he would either be totally on the outside or totally on the inside. Try to be totally on the inside, because there were moments where he was getting caught in between, looking at Tarver. And that was an important thing. Oh, I was going
to
say,
he was second guessing his approach. And I really think, because, you know, Tarver doesn't, you know, Tarver is considered, you know, possibly, you know, someone who could possibly go to the Hall of Fame. Who knows? Borderline. But I don't think Tarver gets the credit for his boxing acumen. And I really, surprisingly, I'm very surprised by this, but he figured Stevie out. He really did. And Tarver does not have the energy. He's a little too much with girth to really let his hands go like that. But once he started getting the beat on Stevie's time, and it changed Stevie's approach, from my perspective. Of course, all three of us are on the outside of the ring, right, guys? So it's not like we're in there on Stevie's mind. But it seemed like it changed Stevie's approach. And from that point on, Tarver was trying to lull Stevie to you know, even when Tarver would come forward and not throw his hands, it's because he was trying to lure Stevie to throw so he could counter him. And it seemed like it made Stevie a little, you know, hesitant, or a little, you know, maybe bewildered as how to attack Tarver and not catch the shots that were coming back, because Stevie couldn't rest after he threw it off.
Yeah. And I know one important thing is I did turn the volume up when Stevie's trainer, Nasir Muhammad, was talking. Mm-hmm. And he said that Stevie was looking at his work.
That's what, yeah.
And a lot of times Stevie would do good work and get caught in between looking at it. Like, and Tarver lulled him into that to a sense, just because a lot of times Stevie would do work, may not hit Tarver clean, but Tarver wouldn't throw punches back. So now like, okay, I could do this. Then a few of those times back, bang, bang, he had double lumbar on the left. I mean, and Tarver changed the angle on his left. He changed the angle on his left. He didn't right hook too much. And that's one thing, but, I mean, Stevie, he ran into a lot of lefts. He didn't change levels. And
you know what that fight reminded me of, Zito, and it's funny because I started to text you. I didn't know if you had watched the fight. What it reminded me of was you sparring against the students at our class, and you were Tarver. Because it seemed like, you know, Tarver was just buying his time and felt like, you know, I could kind of hit this guy whenever I want. And that's kind of how Tarver fought. And, again, Stevie is a world-class pro, and that's not how you want to fight a world-class pro. Tarver didn't go balls to the walls. I don't think he has that in him. But he did enough in spots to easily earn that draw to me. Like, I'm a Stevie fan. I have no problem with that decision now.
And one thing I'll say, Tarver fought well going forward and backward. Not aggressive, but he fought well. And I was surprised. Stevie did, I think it had a lot to do with Tarver's timing, but Stevie stopped going to the body like that. And that's one thing Stevie usually keeps consistent in the fight.
Did you guys catch the fight beforehand, the Marco Huff fight?
How about that one? That wasn't much of a fight.
Wow. Huck obviously was talking about he's invading America and you know he's ready to move back up. Remember, Huck had only lost, he had lost prior, early in his career, 2007. He was stopped by Stevie Cunningham.
Right.
And then he went up to heavyweight and he fought Povetkin and lost a disputed, controversial decision. A lot of people thought he out-hustled Povetkin in. So, you know, Huck was considered the number one guy for the most part. Well, maybe Jan Pablo Hernandez is the number one guy at cruiserweight, but Huck is the guy at cruiserweight. He is, you know, considered the most popular guy, the longest-running champion. And here he's fighting this undefeated Polish kid, and the kid knocks him out in the 11th round.
Yeah.
After getting up from a hook that looked like it finished the kid. I don't know if you saw the knockdown prior.
Yeah, I did.
And I'm saying the kid because I can't pronounce Christoph's name at all. I think his first name is Christoph. But he got caught with a hook that put him flat on his back, and he grabbed his head. And when you see a guy grab their head, they usually don't get up. And for him to get up, take control of the fight back, and then to knock Huck out, it was an amazing fight.
Yeah, it was.
And a surprising result, too, because the big fanfare was, hey, Huck is coming to the States to fight. That was the big thing.
Mm.
And his coming out party was shattered.
Yep, for sure. I was trying to read this morning's fight news, and man, they put it to him. They weren't very impressed with his knockout. I mean, they were impressed by the kid knocking him out, but not with Hulk.
I mean, well, you know, he that was a fight he was favored to win. But you know what? Here's the thing. When you get these younger guys, right? You don't know if they're on that level. Excuse me. You don't know if they're on that level until they fight on that level.
Right.
Well, obviously, the kid's on that level. Remember George Groves. No one knew what level George Groves was. He got a shot at Carl Froch, and he almost made the most of it, and it put him on that level. So, again, until somebody – Andre Ward, his first significant fight was really with Cal Kessler. So, and now he's widely considered the best super middleweight. So until somebody steps to that level and performs, you really don't know. So even though Huck was going in as a favorite, it was primarily based on his resume. You can only compare resumes, but resumes are on paper, and that burns. Paper burns. What happens in the ring is the truth usually. So.
And one thing about up-and-coming guys is people say that they don't know how to win. Well, that can be true in a sense, but they also don't know how to lose.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them. I mean, because when you see them, when they're televised, when you see them, then usually they have something worth, you know, that promoters think they're worth seeing. So, I mean, these guys, they have pressure on them, but, I mean, it's going to go one or two ways. You either win or you lose, or draw in last night's case. But, I mean, usually one or two ways. So,
and you know what else, too, Z?
It's mentality-wise.
Part of the issue with fans and people in general is we constantly do the eye test. We do comparison shopping.
Yeah.
So we'll look at a prospect and say, man, he didn't look good against this guy or he didn't look great against that guy. Thus, he can't beat any of these guys. And the fact of the matter is, until you put him in with – I'll give you a perfect example. Junieski Gonzalez, the guy who fought Jean Pascal. The two fight, he was undefeated, 16-0, 12 knockouts, part of the Cuban amateur system. But the two gentlemen he fought before Pascal both had losing records. Both of these guys had losing records. And he gets in the ring with Pascal. Pascal's a prohibitive favorite, and Pascal should not have walked out of there with a victory. So,
no.
Again, until you actually, first of all, styles make fights. And until someone is thrown in the fire, you don't know whether they're going to burn or not. But the one thing that you do know is going to burn is the resume. Paper always burns. And what happens in the ring is usually the truth.
And that's one thing about experience. And people say, well, this guy has this many fights, he has experience. This guy has this many fights, he has experience. I don't think experience matters. I mean, you're going to get a certain level of experience, more fights. But at the same time, if you're fighting a guy, if you're fighting guys and easily winning, or your fight's always going the same manner, then to be honest, I mean, how much experience do you really have compared to a guy who might not have as many fights, but he's fought a variety of stuff. He's had to adapt and learn how to fight style. I mean, to me, experience means you're going to either learn how to basically adapt to every situation or most all situations, or you have the ability to not have to adapt at all and make your opponent always have to conform. That's where experience comes in.
Yeah, you know, to me, experience is the antithesis of youth. You know, to really gain experience, you kind of have to start to grow older in the sport, in boxing, in everything, essentially. But as you gain experience, you sacrifice youth. And so what happens is you take a Terry Norris versus a Sugar Ray Leonard where youth trumped experience. So, you know, I think that's kind of – that's why a guy like Canelo –
And that's what I'm with Canelo with. That's the same thing I'm thinking of, Canelo.
That's a guy who, again, you know, we could be looking at that guy at 28 years old. And because he's 24, 25 years old with 40-some fights, and he's been in with some you know, top guys. And the fact of the matter is you see him get better. You see the experience actually tangibly in his performances. You know, I remember when he lost to Floyd Mayweather, and I remember how he looked right after that against Angulo. Now, granted, it was Angulo, but I remember he was doing things that he never even tried to do in the ring. And so experience is definitely a factor, but, again, sometimes youth can trump experience. If you get a guy who's just flat out better than you, or a guy who can, you know what, here's the thing, too. Experience is great, but it's a fight.
Yes.
Point blank. Point blank. It's a fight. And if a guy can just get in the ring and beat you, experience is not going to matter. He's going to beat you.
Now there have been young guys who've been through more diverse fights and more diverse opposition than there have been, you know, certain older guys. So in certain circumstances, I mean, it doesn't happen much, to be honest. I mean, just because boxing's boxing, you're generally going to get thrown in, you know, coming up, whoever.
But you know what? In this day and age, it happens more than not. Because
that's what I'm saying.
A guy I like, Andre Berto. Andre Berto, by the time he was fighting the Ghost Guerreros, he wasn't experienced enough for those fights. Yes, he was experienced as far as maybe craft to a certain extent, but he had never been progressed, you know, in a natural, you know, progression. He was fighting a certain level of fighters, and all of a sudden he was thrown to another level fighter. So he never had a chance to progress and develop the experience of going through adversity, having to find a plan B because plan A wasn't working. As Zito was talking about, a fighter being able to just kind of do the same thing against a certain level of opponents. All of a sudden you're throwing a better opponent, and that same trick doesn't work anymore. So you don't have the experience to rely on other tricks or other parts of the craft. And I think that happens too often with fighters who are signed to big managers, big promotional companies, and you know, have a certain look that the promoter or the manager thinks the public's going to buy. They get pushed a lot sooner than they're ready for.
And we might see that within the Vladimir Klitschko fight, Tyson Fury.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's true. That's true. What? It's also a very thin heavyweight field too, so. What's good about this, if Fury is not, you know, now Fury talks so much stuff. And so when a guy like that finally loses, right, you wonder how he's going to respond to that. I think of Nassim Hamed. When he finally lost to Brer, he had one comeback fight, an uneventful 10-rounder against, you know, just a journeyman, and that was it for him. He was essentially done after that loss. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens to Tyson if he goes ahead and loses to Vladimir Klitschko. But if he does, that's an experience, like Brian Jennings, that's only going to serve him as a positive. Not saying it's going to make him a champion, not saying he's going to be a dominant force in the heavyweight division after that. But he will be a better fighter for having fought Vladimir Klitschko if he's not destroyed. It's just the nature of the game. It's trial by fire type of game. It really is.
And what's Tyson's 27 right now?
27, I believe.
Yeah. 27. I mean, and that's young in heavyweight years.
Especially at 6'9", 240, 250.
Young
in
heavyweight years.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're going to have a chance of that to see what they're going to do very shortly, huh?
Yes, I give Tyson a good chance. I'm not saying he's going to win.
Yeah,
I think
he has the tools.
I do think he has the tools.
He definitely has the tools, and especially against Klitschko. I mean, other opponents maybe not as much, but against Klitschko, he has the right tools, and he has the right mentality.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fighter, and that's what it's going to take. He's gonna go through some stuff, but I think Tyson he's good enough to where he can when the fight goes wrong on the outside, because Tyson's gonna look good for a minute or two, but it's gonna start going wrong on the outside, and if Tyson's not sleeping, then he's gonna work his way on the inside, and that's where the fun begins, because Klitschko doesn't hold, he can't hold him, he cannot hold Tyson Fury. That's a guy that you're not just going to put your arms around his shoulders unless you're going up. And he has a mentality not to want to hold.
Well, he's also got that long arm reach that he won't be have to jump inside to try and get a hold of Klitschko and let Klitschko knock him down with his big arms.
Tyson's got a long reach. And you know what? And honestly, he's not as athletic as Klitschko by any stretch of the imagination. And that's honestly –
that's coordinated.
That's probably, in my opinion, you know, experience is obviously a factor, but I think the athleticism, the dynamicism ultimately would be Tyson's downfall in the fight, personally. I think just as far as pure boxing, Tyson has a longer reach. And you know what? He's more fluid than Klitschko. He really is. He's not as tight technically, nowhere near, but he's much more fluid. He's more diverse. He can fight inside. But even just on the outside, he's a guy who can stick and move. Klitschko can stick and kind of step back and grab. Tyson will stick and move and move about the ring. He'll switch stances. To see a 6'9", 255-pound guy shooting a orthodox jab at you, then all of a sudden to throw a right and then to turn that into a right jab and dance around you from southpaw range, I mean, he presents things that Klitschko is not used to seeing. The thing is, though, the big thing is Klitschko does have an eraser. Klitschko does. I mean, he is a very hard puncher. Tyson's tough. I don't know if he can withstand too many of those. However, like Zito said, though, Tyson's tough. He'll get up and he'll make a fight of it. And if Tyson starts to fight Klitschko on the inside, if he chooses to force Klitschko on the inside or push Klitschko back, which he can, then all of a sudden this becomes a very even money fight. Simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember anybody in recent history that has had the reach that Tyson Fury has, the unorthodox, if you will, type of fighting, in only that you don't know where the hell he's coming from at any given time, fight Klitschko?
There's not many recent 6'9" heavyweights.
Yeah,
Tyson Fury is going to make Klitschko see things that he hasn't seen before. Not that Klitschko's not going to be able to solve them and detonate it right on Tyson's jaw, but he's going to make, you know, he's definitely going to make Klitschko see things he hasn't seen before. And what really intrigues me about this fight is Klitschko's not going to be able to, and Tyson Fury said it himself, he's not going to be able to win this fight with jab, jab, grab, jab, jab, grab, jab, right hand. That's not going to work. That's not, like Zito said, when he's not going to be able to jab and then Tyson comes rushing in and he grabs him, because he'll jab and Tyson will jab and Tyson's jab will get there at the same time. You know what I mean? Tyson can, like, part of to me why Brian Jennings gave Klitschko more trouble than people care to admit is because he has a long reach and he's very crafty for a relatively inexperienced guy. And he was able to jab with Klitschko at times. He jabbed to the body. He was able to jab to the head. And then something else we didn't realize was what kind of beard Brian Jennings had. He took a hell of a shot, too.
Yeah.
But he jabbed with Klitschko at times. Tyson Fury is capable. Whether, you know, he'll be able to do it in the ring, of course, what happens in a ring against that particular opponent is two different things. But he's capable of jabbing with Klitschko. So now, all of a sudden, Klitschko can't just jab and grab. Klitschko's going to have to look the counterpunch at times. He's going to have to step in instead of step back. I mean, it's really, you know, I'm sure he's getting great sparring. He's fought tall guys before. But this is by far the biggest guy with this type of talent he's fought.
And to be honest, you're absolutely right. Klitschko, to a certain extent, is going to have to come outside of his normal game to beat Fury. And Fury has that dog in him. That's one thing. Fury,
yes,
Fury
he
has that dog in him. So,
yes,
and
he's
a prideful guy. He'll fall. I mean, and I'm pretty sure Klitschko's going to drop him. And it's going to drop him on the outside because Fury's going to be playing the outside game with him, to a certain extent, with success. But then Klitschko's going to get his timing down. And then with Klitschko, he's going to have to feel confident in moments where he's not used to feeling confident.
Exactly.
That's going to be a key. He's confident on the outside jabbing you, staring you into his right. He's confident now that he's developed a left hook. It's going to be hard to hit Tyson Fury with that jab left hook. It's going to be very hard to hit him with that.
Isn't that what Eddie said about when he was training with him?
Yeah.
So I thought he came up with a pretty high marks for the Fury group, and Tyson especially.
You know, personally, I don't think anyone who's fairly and objectively watched Tyson Fury since he was 24 years old, seriously, objectively, I don't think there's anybody who wouldn't say he doesn't stand a chance. You know what I mean? I wouldn't favor him. I'm not leaning towards him. But would it surprise me? Nope, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised because I think he has the tools and the skill set to do so. Whether he can do it for 12 rounds or however long it takes against Vladimir Klitschko is two different things. Because like we said before, paper burns. But on paper, he has the skills and the tool set. And more importantly, the size with the skills to do it. He's not the athlete that Vladimir Klitschko is, but he's become, you know, a fine boxer in his own right. And a guy that big is always, even though he's not a big puncher, a guy that big hitting you clean, you know, is always an issue. And Klitschko's not the best taker either, so.
And that's the point. That's another point. Tyson Fury, he has 24 fights with, 18 knockouts? So he's not really void of power. I mean, I used to think he's not the hardest hitting guy. And you can see to a certain extent, but when he's confident, he can go ahead and get you out of there. And one thing is important. It depends. I think, and I can't say who's going to win, but it depends on stamina. If Tyson gets up and decides to fight, well, then if he has the stamina to go ahead and fight, Klitschko has a problem on his hands,
funny you would say that. I remember Tyson fought a domestic level opponent, a guy named Michael Spratt.
Nah.
I believe it was Michael Spratt. Two fights over in Britain I think it was Michael Spratt, but he came in kind of out of shape, and he slagged through the fight. You know what I mean? He
was
able to kind of escape with a decision. He kind of slagged his way through it. Again, he was 23, 24. Since this dude is, like, really matured, you know, and as an athlete and really dedicated himself, I saw his fight with Chisora. One thing Chisora will do, Chisora will pressure you from the start until it ends. What Chisora's problem is, he gets in range and doesn't always throw punches. But
he'll run into it.
He always works his way in range. And what happened is Fury was forced, because of how Chisora was fighting, Fury was forced to be on his toes all night long. And he did it for 10 rounds. He didn't look like he was getting slow. He did it until he stopped Chisora. So I don't doubt that Fury can go 12 hard. I don't doubt that. Not only has he proven it to me by going, you know, a good distance with Stevie in a pretty good fight, you know what I mean, where he had to actually change tactics.
He worked.
To me, doing a poor man's Ali against Joe Frazier for 10 rounds against Chisora, that was a 6'9 guy on his toes for the better part of 10 rounds. I have no doubt, especially at 27, that he can go 12. And I have no doubt he'll be in the condition to. Again, his biggest problem is fighting a champ. He's fighting a guy that, for all intents and purposes, has not been invulnerable but has been unbeatable. So, again, kind of like a Floyd Mayweather, unless I see something so dynamic in a challenger, you kind of got to side with the expected result. But when I look at the heavyweight landscape, if I think there's a guy who can do it, I think this guy. I don't think Deontay Wilder. I think this guy.
I have to be honest. I agree with you. But I think this guy, he may be able to do it now. A year from now, he's a little older, maybe a little wiser, maybe another two fights under him. Huh? Klitschko, year older. I would lean toward Fury.
It's funny because Fury's a mandatory, and he's obviously had enough fights.
Yeah.
He's done some things.
Deserve it.
I would personally have liked to see Fury in with the Tony Thompson or somebody, you know, closer to that level. I mean, he's been in with some people. Part of the reason being is I do think Fury could use a few more fights. But again, it's a very, very thin heavyweight division. And, I mean, Fury is legitimately rated in the top two or three, legitimately. So it's not like, you know, first of all, he's going to take the fight. It's not like he can avoid it. But you don't avoid a fight with the champ. But the fact of the matter is if I'm his manager, I would like to get Fury two more fights, possibly. But again, in a thin division, which is why a guy like Amir Mansour has hope, because it's a thin division. A couple good wins will put you in a shot, you know, for some money. So again, the time is now, and as long as he's not bludgeoned to death, I don't think he's. I think it, as long you know what for him, it's not just a physical thing, but it's a confidence thing too. As long as if he can lose that fight and walk away the same Tyson Fury, that guy could be king later on. But I mean, here Anthony Joshua coming up, who is a problem. Man,
I've seen clips of him.
He's still got a ways to go, but man, he looks impressive.
Well, you talk about the money. There's another fight coming up that's already set records at Madison Square Garden, the Golovkin fight in October. I mean, they're all already sold out. Golovkin,
you know what? One thing that K2, Tom Loeffler and those guys at K2 did that, you know, obviously they've been trying to make Golovkin a star. Them, along with their partner, in a sense, HBO, have been really trying to make Golovkin a star. So this is his first pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
One smart thing they did, they put him on with a can't-miss puncher. A guy, to me, who's really just going to make GGG look really good. He's going to make Triple G look good. Because he's kind of like Canelo and Kirkland. That's what this is. This is like Canelo Kirkland. There's a clear favorite. You know what it is? You know who's going to win, but you know it's going to be dynamic for however long it lasts, right? Because you know that guy is going to be trying to swing for the fences. That was number one. Number two, what they did was put a fantastic undercard together. So, I mean, it's can't miss. Toriano Johnson, who we saw live against Curtis Stevens, his one loss, a very disputed stoppage. He's in against an Irish guy. And that's like a title eliminator. We also have Roman Gonzalez, Chocolito. He's in against the Hawaiian Punch, Brian Valoria. That's a fight that has been talked about for the last couple of years just because of Brian Valoria's stature in the sport. And then we have heavyweights, Luis King Kong Ortiz, undefeated, 21-0 and 19 knockouts against former champion Bermain Stiver. So, like, all those fights, except the Toriano Johnson fight, could each headline the HBO show itself. You know, a regular HBO world championship. You could easily headline with Bermain Stiver against Carlos Ortiz.
Yeah.
So, so that's that. They put together a fantastic, fantastic card. The other thing, too, is they have been building Golovkin on the East Coast for quite some time. So it's all part of a greater strategy. The other thing, too, is Lemieux is from Montreal. Montreal is very close to New York, so it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, as of Friday morning, the pre-sale seats were 6,000 tickets were sold.
Yeah, I read that. The records were broken. I read that.
Yeah, it's going to make for an interesting fight, too. One thing, if I think Golovkin is going to win, Lemieux could present problems if he moved his head more. Because Lemieux could work on the inside. I like his work on the inside. And against certain people, I like the way he gets in on the inside. He did a good job against him there. It's just against Golovkin. Golovkin can work on the inside, too. But Golovkin's not a skin-to-skin guy. See, people get it confused. He's not you know, a total range guy. You know he's not a toes boxer. He wants it from range. He doesn't want you skin to skin either. He wants you at a certain distance where his shots can hurt. That's where Lemieux could present problems because Lemieux could skin to skin fight better than Golovkin to me.
You know what?
That's more of his
trade. That's where Lemieux can present problems. Lemieux's not going to present problems, but that's where he can present problems.
Thing.
I'm really
that's
confident in saying that.
That's the thing. And you have to get through a certain territory. It's just Golovkin's territory is not totally out, is not totally in. But his middle ground is something to behold.
And
that's
you know,
where Lemieux has
the timing. And what happens is when you do get in on him, which you always have to kind of be, because, and I do agree, when one thing I noticed about Golovkin is once you get inside, he just squares up and kind of doesn't crouch at his knees. I've noticed that. But when he does go across at his knees, what he does is uncork that left hook to the
left
liver.
Hook to the body.
Yeah, and that'll get you the hell up off of him. When I look at Lemieux, we talk about a guy, to me, who could have used a couple more fights. Now, again, Lemieux's had a bunch of fights, but he's still like 26, 27 years old. He just won the title. You know what I mean? If you watch the Ndam fight, he knocked Ndam down like four times. But the rounds that he didn't hurt Ndam in, but that's typical Ndam. The rounds you don't hurt Ndam in.
You have to work. He made him work.
But, again, I think Lemieux has made great strides in his career. I really do. I would have liked to have seen him, you know, in a little, a couple more fights before you put him in with Golovkin. It's definitely the best fight, the most exciting fight. Let's say that, the most exciting fight that could be made in the true middleweight division, not Cotto's middleweight division. So it's, you know, definitely the most exciting fight that could be made in the true middleweight division. But, again, just when I look at David Lemieux, everything he does, to a certain extent, Golovkin does better. I do agree with Zito. I think Lemieux is a little bit better inside fighter because, again, that's because I don't think Golovkin he's not an inside fighter. Golovkin likes to fight at a certain range. He closes the distance, but he stays at the range of his punches. And I think part of the reason, and what I love about him, is because he does that, when you go to grab him, he just takes a half step back, pushes off, and he's still hitting you. Lemieux has the power that can hurt Golovkin. I just don't know if Lemieux is clean enough to get there. Here's the thing. I just think Golovkin is going to get there first. It's just simple as that. And I think that's what it comes down to. And then Lemieux is the guy who's coming towards it. So I just don't see it going any other way.
Lemieux's damage is inside, and Golovkin's damage is basically the middle ground. And Lemieux's not going to be able to really effectively navigate that middle ground without damage.
Not consistently.
Mm-hmm. Well, he doesn't need it consistently against Golovkin.
But here's the thing, though. And I think it was Lemieux. It may have been someone else who said this. You know, a lot of people talk. But someone said, you know, push him backwards. I like to see how he fights going backwards. And I don't think it was Lemieux. But if Lemieux starts to push him backwards. But you know what? I saw Kassim Uma push him backwards a little bit, you know, at times. Now, Kassim Uma has a literally unhealthy chin. Like his chin, he takes shots so well, it's unhealthy.
And keeps punching.
And keeps punching. So Golovkin would have to, like I saw Golovkin have to take a step back, catch a breath, reset, you know what I mean? Lemieux's not walking through that kind of fire. I don't think he's that guy. And I think to push Golovkin back, you have to consistently walk through that kind of fire, and I don't think he's going to be able to do it. That's what it comes down to today. However,
not with his style.
If he gets to that point, he poses a much more significant threat than Kassim Uma did.
And one thing is footwork.
Mm-hmm.
If he's catching Golovkin squared up, Golovkin can uncork that left hook. But if he's in there doing damage, because Lemieux, he does it hard, and he can go to the body pretty good too. So Golovkin, I mean, he might really make Golovkin. It'll be interesting if Lemieux pushes that kind of pace and successfully gets in on the inside, can Golovkin back foot?
Yeah.
That's the only thing. If he has that power, nobody wants to walk into that power. He can flat foot back foot, but nobody wants to walk into that power.
Can he do what Lucas Matisse was able to do to prevent the cough? Yeah, could he do that? I don't know. But you know, I don't
think, might not have to.
I don't think he would have to, because I don't think, first of all, Lemieux has that Provitnikov kind of chin. And the other thing too is, I think you made a good point. Lemieux doesn't move his head. Golovkin's not a big head mover, but he parries punches well. He catches punches off his forearms.
That's a good shield.
Well. Yeah, he really does. And that's the other thing. You got two guys who are big punchers. One is more hittable.
Yeah.
I typically favor the bigger puncher who's less hittable. And that's what it comes down to me.
That's where we agree.
We talked about Cotto and we talked about Canelo, but how about let's talk about the upcoming Cotto and Canelo fight that's now official, huh?
When is that? November 7th or 4th? I just read the date.
They just moved to to November 21st.
21st, okay.
Yeah, it's been unofficially official for a while.
Yeah, now they finally set a date on it. What do you think that one's going to go, Z?
I'm trying to see an avenue for this guy. I really am.
I know who he's talking about.
I mean, there could be certain avenues. No. It's going to be problematic. Cotto can outbox Canelo for certain moments. Canelo's an awfully good boxer who has awfully good timing on combinations that are powerful. Cotto, he could throw powerful combinations when he's leading. He's not much of a counterpuncher. Now, he can get slick defensively at times, and he can present Canelo problems with angles when Canelo's trying to lead. Here's the thing. Canelo's also, and we were talking about this early, he's one of those young, seasoned guys to where he can bait Cotto on the lead and then explode with a combination in the Cotto. Body, head. Enough of that, Cotto's going to have problems. Where I can see Cotto really giving Canelo problems at, to be honest, though, is footwork. Erzlande Laura moved around Canelo all night long. Canelo was never able to trap Erzlande on the ropes, never able to make him exchange, make him fight his kind of fight. They said Erzlande ran all night. He did, and they gave Canelo the fight. I thought it may have been a round of draw or Erzlande won because he landed the cleaner shots. But, I mean, Cotto.
It's exasperation on the other end here.
I mean, he could have. I mean, Cotto. He can. He can do that. Not like Laura. Not with the pop Laura has. I mean, just planting when you're moving and then you stop and plant. He doesn't have that sort of pop. But Cotto can do that. Cotto's not going to push Canelo back. And if Cotto tries to, that's going to be his downfall. It's going to go quicker. Prediction-wise, I'll give it to, I have to say Canelo's going to stop Cotto maybe around 9.
Right now, you know, I'm not going to give a prediction now because it's way, you know, we're still a few months out, and I like to, you know, just see how things, I really like to wait to weigh in, actually. But just to I'm just going to mention a couple of things. Cotto's biggest flaw as a fighter is in the transitions. Zito and I have talked about that. Actually, other boxing commentators have talked about that. That Cotto's weakness is in the transitions. When you're fighting a dynamic counterpuncher, you don't want to be weak in the transitions. And that's what Cotto's fighting in Canelo, a dynamic counterpuncher, combination counterpuncher, kind of like a Marquez, for instance. Canelo, his big weakness is his feet. Canelo's feet at times are very cementish. And the guys that gave him trouble with their defense to a certain extent. Now, Erzlande Laura is a supreme mover and sniper. Floyd is a similar mover and sniper, and he moved a lot more against Canelo than he did against other people. And then Austin Trout's another rangy guy who fights at distance and kind of uses his range. He keeps you from getting in a comfortable punching range if you're a smaller guy. Cotto doesn't have those attributes. Cotto can be slick defensively, but Cotto's not the mover that either of those guys, not one of those three guys are, nor does he have the range that either one of those guys are. Floyd Mayweather, who's the smallest of those three guys, is longer than Cotto. So, again, Cotto doesn't have the range, and he has significantly better feet than Canelo, but he's not as slick as these other guys. I think, too, where it comes down to, I think it really comes down to Canelo's feet and Cotto's mode of attack. I think that really decides the fight. Let me say this, too. I see an avenue of victory for both guys. I think Cotto has an avenue of victory, specifically if he fights the Canelo who fought Floyd Mayweather. Now, Cotto's not the same guy, but that Canelo did not push the action enough. Of course, he had a master counterpuncher in front of him, which Cotto is not. But still, he was a little too tepid with his feet. What I've seen since then, you know, I've seen a guy since then, you know, who even against Arizona Lara, he didn't know how to cut the ring off on Lara, but he pushed the action with Lara. And if that guy would be a handful for Cotto. A Canelo who pushes the action would really be a handful for Miguel Cotto. And I'll just leave it there.
Hey, guys,
now,
we're joined
Cotto
by excuse me just a second. We're joined by Dr. Chris.
There he is.
Hey,
Dr.
how
Chris.
You doing? I hear you talking about Cotto. What did you think of the fight last night with Cunningham? And did you guys see it?
Oh yeah,
it was on a new channel. Did you guys catch it?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Wasn't much of a fight. I thought Cunningham came in too light. Tried to outbox Tarver, move around too much. Tarver's over a hill. He's overweight. He was sluggish. I thought if Cunningham came in at 225 or so, I think he would have bopped him around pretty good. But he wanted to be
Stevie
a boxer last night.
Yeah, Stevie can't get up to 225, did Dr. Chris?
Yeah,
I think the most Stevie may have ever weighed is 207. Maybe two. Have you weighed 207, Butch?
Yeah, I think he weighed 214 in this one.
No, he was only 204 for this one.
There was it.
Stevie,
he was down
light. Never.
He was moving like a welterweight.
Yeah, I don't think Stevie's ever come in at heavyweight over 210.
No.
You know, do you?
No. It might have came in maybe 212. I mean, maybe against Tyson Fury or somebody.
Maybe,
yeah,
maybe
212,
but Stevie can't get to 220 healthily. Not naturally.
I have to say, Dr. Chris, though, if Stevie would have moved around more on the outside, I mean, then he would have won the fight easily, hands down.
Yeah, I think so, too.
He was undisciplined. Stevie was undisciplined, and Tarver baited him into being undisciplined.
Yep.
He didn't know what the hell he was doing in there. Why did I get him on the station? Somebody coached him wrong for that fight. No? Maybe he better go back to them tough fights. He's smarter.
He said get the bigger guy.
Smarter when he gets stumped.
Bring the 240-pounders on.
Yeah.
I mean, Tarver, it seemed like Tarver just got Stevie's timing down when Stevie was doing one thing, and Stevie didn't really adapt to do a whole much else. He got mixed in between games.
Yeah, he looked awful. He didn't do good against a southpaw. I don't know whether it was the fact that he was a southpaw or what it was. But
Stevie's feet were right
in
position for
the
most
good
part.
Timing. I think Tarver's timing was subtle defensive. Like with Tarver, you know, he doesn't throw a lot of punches, but he doesn't give you a lot either. He's not a very easy target to hit. I mean, you can catch him in his midsection every now and then, but he knows how to slide over very slightly. You know what I mean? And what he would do is he moves
pretty good. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, very subtly. Not too much, though, right, Dr. Chris? Very subtly.
And he makes Stevie extend himself. He makes Stevie extend himself when he missed. So he's missing more of an opening.
And then he moves, and he usually keeps himself in punching range. Because, you know, and the other thing, too, is Tarver, he'll time you because he's not afraid to punch when you punch because he knows he's got a good chin, too. So, I mean, So Stevie could beat him to the punch, but Tarver's proven all throughout his career that he knows how to beat speed with timing. He just doesn't have the energy, or maybe he was a little too heavy. He just at this point can't let his punches go the way he needs to let him go to beat a guy like
that. Yeah. He's 46 years old.
Yeah. And that's awesome. And you know what? 46 years old and a good 40 pounds heavier than his best.
Yeah. Last time he fought, he fought Stallone. Didn't give him a hard fight either.
You know what? I think that was a draw, too. I believe that was a draw, too. That was a draw, too.
A draw? Yeah, he likes draws. Stallone likes draws.
He can mean he fly. Wow.
They had Paulie at ringside. Remember Paulie?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I
love Paulie, man.
Paulie's
my favorite character. Father-in-law.
Yeah.
He's crazy anyway. He used to steal the show. He was funny, man. You know, and especially Rocky One. Jesus.
But, right.
Now, before that Cunningham fight, that was a great fight on.
That Marco Huck fight. Yes.
Oh, my God. What's that guy's name? One guy was Polish, and the other guy was, I don't know what he...
Marco Huck. He was a champion.
It went, almost the distance. They caught him at the end. And that guy never been off his feet, never was knocked out. Hasn't been beaten in 6 years. And that Polish boy hung in there, and he was getting stung. You know? That was a great fight.
They should have a rematch for that one. Great fight with a surprising ending as well, too. You don't usually see your favorite guy stretched.
He kept counterpunching, and that guy, he dropped his hands when he moved back. Boom.
Yeah. Caught him with a sweeping wide left hook. And you know what I like?
Yeah.
He caught him with the sweeping hook as he was leaning back, and then came with a straight punch right after that. Straight.
Yeah.
Right.
That was a good fight. I like that fight.
You
fight
hit him
again,
with that, you're running on him. So you're energy. You're running. That's a running shot.
Somebody told me that guy was champion for 6 years.
Yeah, you know what? His first title shot, he fought Stevie Cunningham, and he got stopped in the 12th round. And since that, he hadn't lost a cruiserweight. He had only lost a very controversial decision to Alexander Povetkin for Povetkin's title. Outside of that, he'd been undefeated at cruiserweight since his loss to Stevie.
Yeah, he got a lot of talent. Got a good right hand, but he threw too many single punches. He threw a right hand and then hold his left back. It was a sloppy right hand. He tried to bang that guy on top of the head. If he came around with a left hook and finished every combination, he would have been in better shape defensively. If you finish with a left hook, you're covering yourself a little bit for a counter right. You know, he didn't do that. He'd throw one punch. What the hell? But I was disappointed in Stevie. He moved around too much. He didn't look coordinated. He didn't look like he had a game plan. How the hell do you fight a draw with that guy after hanging in there for a long time with the Big Moose? Tyson Fury. Damn moose. Before the moose.
Yeah, it's not a way to impress your new management with because he just signed with Dan Birmingham.
Who did, Stevie?
Yep.
Wow. Well, Dan will get him on the right track.
Oh.
Yep. No, Stevie's not with Dan.
You mean
Al Heyman.
Al Heyman, that's what I meant, yeah.
Yeah, he's not leaving. I've seen Richardson.
No.
Yeah, he's with Al Heyman. That's why he was on PBC last night. So,
right.
It didn't damage Stevie's standing in the heavyweight division at all. I think it probably elevated Tarver's a little bit because I don't think most people thought he was going to be able to hang with Stevie. So,
It definitely wasn't a step forward for Stevie.
No.
It did more to enhance Tarver. I definitely agree with that.
Stevie was by far the best competition Tarver had faced at heavyweight.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, and he held in there and got a draw. And you know what? And it's a draw I can't argue with.
Well, there was talk earlier in the week that the road to Klitschko was through these two. I certainly didn't see that.
Yeah, that was just talk, Butch. Just talk.
Somebody with no sense.
Just talk.
The road to Klitschko is through them two guys.
The only reason why Klitschko's name is even a part of the conversation is because that's what Tarver was saying, is that he was looking straight through Stevie to Klitschko because that's what he wants. He wants to become the oldest heavyweight champion in the world and, you know, yada, 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 yada.
Is he serious about that?
You know, fighters can be a little somewhat – a little less realistic than those outside the ropes. He's very serious.
Klitschko get arrested for murder. As slow as oh my God. Can't imagine.
That's a terrible style match, that's a talk.
If they were the same size, that'd be interesting. But for Vladimir Klitschko, for Vladimir Klitschko, Tarver would just be a punching bag, literally. Tarver does not have the legs at all. He didn't have the legs to reach Stevie. You know what I mean? So,
And Vladimir is not going to come to him like that.
Yeah, Vladimir is just going to punch him from across the ring, and Tarver won't be able to get close to him at all.
And he's going to beat the hell out of him from across the ring.
That right hand will knock him right in the forehead, knock him. There's no way Tarver should. Matter of fact, nobody would watch. I'd watch the fight, but fight wouldn't draw flies, you know. So
I'll watch it just to see Tarver get knocked out. As tough as he is, that's the knockout fight for him.
Tarver couldn't even physically. Like, to me, have a Hail Mary punch chance of victory because physically he wouldn't even be able to get close and pull the trigger to unload on Vladimir with a shot hard enough that would drop Vladimir. He couldn't. It wouldn't happen. Physically, he's not in a position. First of all, as you know, chinny as Vladimir is, he's a big guy. He's not going to push him over and he falls. You know what I mean? You got to hit him with something. And Tarver can't. There's no way he could get his feet in a position and be able to generate enough force and Klitschko be open that long to where he could even have a puncher's chance against Klitschko. That would be the biggest mismatch to me. He would literally be a puncher bag.
In position. He'd never, ever be in position.
Never.
He'd be in position for Klitschko. That's the only position he'd be in for Klitschko.
The wrong position. he would never get in position. That's the thing. Stevie would at least get in position to land a shot. You know what I mean?
Tarver has no urgency in his footsteps whatsoever. And Klitschko is urgent not to get hit. And he's more athletic than Tarver. He's bigger than Tarver. He can take wider footsteps than Tarver. He can lean back as far as Tarver can punch. That's a knockout.
It would just be a punching bag.
But I will say this,
predicated on last night's fight, I would like to see Tarver in with some more of the lower top 15 ranked heavyweights. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing Tarver against Amir Mansour.
That would be a good fight.
I think they would just be entertaining fights. Why not?
Yeah.
That would be a good fight. Man, you just said it. Mansour and him. Good fight.
I think that'd be interesting. Because Mansour likes to attack. You know what? If Mansour would, again, the way you beat Tarver outside of, you know, somebody big like that, you just outwork him. And that's how Mansour would have to beat him. But I think Tarver's timing would be some problem.
That's why I would like to see Tarver against like an Areola.
His timing would be so problematic. See, the thing, you know what? Where Tarver's going to have his problems is these guys can outwork him, and then by them being heavyweights, they could stand up to a shot the way a light heavyweight couldn't, per se. You know what I mean? So he would have to land enough to get those guys out of there. Like, he landed a couple on Stevie, but, you know, not enough, you know what I mean? And that's always going to be his downfall. He's looking for a puncher's chance, essentially, in most fights that he fights at heavyweight.
He landed enough on Stevie to make Stevie do other things.
Well, he landed enough on Stevie to where I can't argue with him strong.
Yeah. I mean, in the sort of fight he was fighting in an earn and draw, I mean, I can't discredit him.
When I see Areola try to do against him, is just push him up against the ropes and just leaning on him. You know what I mean? Just leaning on him and just digging punches. But every time Areola closes the distance. But, I mean, again, these guys are 6'4". You know what I mean? Tarver just has a hard time getting close to anybody.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Who's fighting tonight?
Lucien Boutte is fighting some opponent, so to speak. I don't know the gentleman's. Delucia. So it's more so. Lucien Boutte has been out the ring for 13 months. Comeback fight for him.
Yeah.
He's looking to restake his claim in the light heavyweight division.
He's a very talented fighter. Lucien's a very talented fighter. I mean, armor tells, and he's beginning to know his armor. So we'll see, you know, if he has a different approach or.
Mm-hmm. When's Kovalevsky fight?
Kovalev?
The light heavyweight champ.
You know what?
Huh?
Kathy Duva sent Yvonne Michel out of Canada an offer for Kovalev to fight Archer Beterbiev. Yeah, for him to fight Beterbiev. Beterbiev is now 9-0 with 9 knockouts.
Yeah.
He's beaten a lot of people. A lot of people look at him as the destroyer coming, and he has 2 wins over Kovalev in the amateurs. So they were looking for Kovalev to fight Beterbiev in Moscow. HBO was well behind the fight because Beterbiev looks like he could be the goods. But Beterbiev's team said they'd rather have one more fight. Because, again, even though Beterbiev has, he's another one of those guys with like 300 amateur fights. He only has 9 pro fights. So they said they'd like him to have one more fight, but they said they'd love to do the Kovalev fight. And they said Beterbiev would beat him again. And he's another guy who punches very, I mean, that would be an interesting fight. Obviously, he's not professionally seasoned enough for Kovalev, but he would be, even maybe to a certain extent, more than Jean Pascal. He would be the most dangerous opponent that would be in front of Kovalev. This guy could ice him with one punch.
Right now, Kovalev and Beterbiev is equivalent to Golovkin and Lemieux, to me, at this stage.
Right now.
To be honest, I would give Beterbiev 3 more fights within this year and then schedule it a year from now.
Yep.
I wouldn't even have him fight a year. Schedule it a year from now. But give him 3 more and make 2 of those solid fights.
Not to
knock him off the block, but just to, you know, just to push him.
In another division, Beterbiev is good enough to where you roll the dice. But in a division with Kovalev, you don't want to take that chance just yet. Because Kovalev is a bona fide killer. You know what
Kovalev
I mean? There are other divisions.
There
are other divisions where, like for instance, when Vasily Lomachenko, he fought Orlando Salido. Orlando Salido is a tough guy. But he's not Sergey Kovalev. So you're asking a guy with 9 fights, regardless of how good he is, to fight one of the guys who's probably maybe the universally considered one of the most dangerous people in boxing. It's just too soon. But you know what?
Did they actually schedule? Did you guys hear that they scheduled a fight between Triple G and Lemieux? Did you guys hear that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
That's going to be a bloodbath.
It's the fastest sellout in the history of the new Madison Square Garden. They sold 6,000 tickets already.
Yeah. That's got the potential to be a great fight.
Yeah.
You know?
October 17th.
Yeah. I got to get Lemieux a new barber. He's got to stop going to prison and getting his hair cut.
He says, stop.
He gets a prisoner haircut. They shave his head all up the side and leave a nest on top. He looks dumb. If he get his damn hair back in, he
looks
like
he
might
dumb.
Fight smarter. He got that prisoner haircut.
He's rolling those in prison to get his
haircut.
What kind of chance?
I went down
Puerto
Rico to one of the natives. I needed a haircut. I come out. I look like that's what I look like, Lemieux. Like, what the hell did they do to my hair? Shave my head all up. I said, I'm not going in the army. Damn.
You think Lemieux has a good
but
chance?
Anyway,
at Triple G,
I
Dr.
love
Chris?
The style.
Huh? Yeah. You think he has? You think he has a chance at Triple G, Dr. Chris? What do you think his chances are?
I got to give him a chance. He punches so damn hard with his left hook, and there might be a headbutt or a cut. He's got a chance, but you know, if I wouldn't bet my house on it, I wouldn't bet against. I don't think I could ever bet against Triple G. I don't think I could do it. But even as tough as Lemieux is, I mean, because he's going to walk right into a volley of hammering punches. I mean, if
yeah,
he continues that
he's
style.
He's going to walk right into it.
He's right in. I mean, he's the aggressor.
He
doesn't take a backward step.
Yeah.
And Lemieux goes forward all the time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, throws that short hook. And I mean,
short.
It's going to be a
short's
battle.
Short's the problem.
Oof.
So what's the problem?
Yep, because somebody's
going to
step
longer.
Back and throw a long straight right. And then
Love gives,
follow
Love
a little
gives.
Bit
That's what's going to happen.
It'll
be
interesting. It has a chance to be very interesting.
Yeah.
Again, you can see a great
fight. He's going to give away reach and height.
Yep.
But, you know, it'll make a great fight, though. Let's see. We'll see what
happens.
Guys,
we're up against our time here, so... Chris, I want to thank you for coming on again. I hope you're feeling better.
I was hitting golf balls when I was hitting in bed. I couldn't wait to quit. Get on the show. I was over there. I got walking pneumonia. The doctor told me I got walking pneumonia. My doctor is Vinny Boombatz. He was Rodney Dangerfield's doctor. So he says, I can walk around. What the hell's walking pneumonia in the summertime?
Microplasma pneumonia.
But you know what? He treated me. What he was treating really was an upper respiratory infection. The Lyme disease beat the hell out of me. Then I got my resistance down. Then I got that on top of it. And I feel like 100% better.
Good.
I got down. I weighed in at 203 this morning.
There you go.
Which is good.
Yeah.
That's my lightest in a long while. And I can move faster than Tarver. At 203. I wouldn't sit back on my rear end and wait for somebody to commit and make a mistake. I thought it was a terrible fight. I was awake for 8 rounds. I dozed off and missed the last 3 rounds. And I don't know what the hell happened until you told me, Frank. But I saw the first 8. And, what are you going to do? All right, guys, I guess you're going to be on next week, Frank?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right.
We weren't on last week because our sponsor got married.
Yeah.
My daughter got married
next
weekend. Yeah.
So. Big event.
Yes, sir.
Big event.
It was.
Marry a good guy?
Okay. Yes. Very, very good guy.
Nice guy?
Yes.
That's the secret.
Yes,
you
it
know?
Is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the secret. Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm happy for her.
Yep.
That's good. Yeah. All right, guys.
Bye,
I'll see you next week.
All right, Chris. Take care of yourself.
All right. Take care, guys.
Okay.
Take it easy, guys.
Ty, you want to lead us out?
Hey, it's been a great show. It was nice getting back on the air with you guys. Miss you guys over the last few weeks. It's always great hearing from Dr. Chris. Bob is our co-pilot. We'll see everyone next week.
Ty, Z?
Oh, yeah. As usual, it's been a wonderful show. I'm sad it has to end. Thank you, Dr. Chris, definitely, as always. Thank you, guys. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob, and if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Butch?
I want to thank everybody that came on. Z, Ty, you always do a great job. I appreciate that. Chris always is he's always there for the – he's got the knowledge, but he certainly does have the fun to go along with it. We also like to thank everybody that listens. We really appreciate it. We had 2 weeks where we had to put on our arcade shows or archive shows, and but they did go well, and we do appreciate it. We didn't see a drop in numbers, which was really funny to see that. I don't know what that says about my abilities, but we want to thank everybody again. These programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of the Police and Fire Services. If you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, just give them a wink, a handshake, anything to let them know that you know that they're there. These programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcat, Sergeant Thomas Bager, Patrolman Jeffrey Yaswit, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Endler, Lieutenant Mike Zerber, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Wilmington, Longbow Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Lieutenant Sean Collier, MIT officer, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Wilmington, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condon, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Patrolman Robert Wilson, the Philadelphia Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hand. Good night.
Shemalek ma'ilama Shema hezahir ma Son ashen evorat fed Hakuig again ma'ir ma Shema lek ma'ir ma Shema hezahir ma Son ashen Spirit of
Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised. 1999 is response to his last emergency. May God rest his soul.
Hey, Bob. We love you.